Good morning, everyone.
Oh, God, this is very, very loud, isn't it? I'm sorry. It seems like the wireless mic is yet again out of battery, so I have to use this one. I hope that that's all right with you. So I'll try to get it charged now while I speak, and perhaps after the break we'll get the normal sound here. Sorry. All right, so hello and welcome to this seminar two of the IMT 4601. And my name is Karen, and I'm going to have a little talk about doing the sort of research that is necessary to do your background chapter of your reports. So everyone is in the right place and doing what we think we're doing here today? Yeah? Yeah. Okay, good. So we're going to have a little chat today about how to do a literature review. And this is going to be, as I said, the backgrounds chapter of your report. And it requires quite a lot of work, and I hope that I'll, after these lectures today, that we'll get some idea on how to get started. Can you all hear me properly? Everything is good? Yeah. So I do have a tendency to chatter on ever so slightly, so if I speak too quickly, or, you know, just let me know if you have any questions and I will address it along the way. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so this is what's on the agenda for today. I'll spend a little time first to talk about what a literature review is, and why to do it, indeed, where to get started. But I'll spend most of our time today to talk about searching, documenting the search, the methods chapter, how to use this this documentation form and analysis form. And then I'll round it up by reminding you of a few things concerning the bibliography, etc. Hi. I think I've had a lecture. I did scientific methodology with you last year, didn't I? Yeah. That work out okay for you? You all passed your things? Very good. But I'll remind you of a few things that we talked about last year, because, as you know, I read your essays last year, and while most of you did fine, there are a few issues that actually most of students, regardless of their level, struggle with. So I'm going to address a few of those things, just to remind you of where we are, sort of. Yeah. Okay? Sounds okay with you? Yeah, good. So, I feel a little awkward standing behind this because I usually, like, walk along while I'm teaching, but yeah, I'll do my best. Helen Aveyard, she described a literature review as the comprehensive study and interpretation of literature that relates to a particular topic. And the key words here are really comprehensive study and interpretation. Those are the main words of this definition. So what we want you to do is to read up on a particular topic and then synthesize what you find and present it in your report and interpret the data that you've found. And the really important thing to think about, to keep in mind at all times, is that your job is to create new knowledge. Even though it is a literature review, new knowledge is really what we're looking for. So your job is to create new knowledge and then present it, because that is what research is, to find new knowledge or a new way of looking at the already existing knowledge and then present it to an audience. And that's really what this is all about, to find new knowledge on a particular topic. You're with me this far? Good. And, you know, finding new knowledge sounds a lot simpler than it really is, because as you are well aware, the internet and databases and everything, it's filled with knowledge. In fact, I think we are now, each 3 days, we are creating as much new knowledge as from, you know, the beginning of time till 1750. Every 3 days, we are producing that amount. And it's just an unimaginable number of articles that comes out every single day. So finding new knowledge doesn't sound that difficult, but trying to create a new whole on a particular topic is not as easy as it sounds. So that's, you know, you've got your work cut out for you. You really do. Do stop me if you have questions here. Yeah. So we generally, typically, talk about two kinds of literature reviews. We have the traditional literature review, and then we have the systematic. And your literature review will tend more towards the traditional, but in fact, it's kind of somewhere in the middle. Yeah. And I'll try to explain. So just to see the difference between these two kinds, we've listed a few things that sort of separates them. The aim of a traditional literature review is to see the big picture, to gain a broad understanding, to describe a certain field. Hi. while the systematic review, it has a very specified aim and objectives. It's very, very tightly defined. So it, sort of the traditional, broader, the systematic, very narrow and specified. When it comes to the scope, traditional, the big picture, seeing what's happening in a certain field, while the systematic one is very narrowly focused. When you're planning this review, you know, the traditional one is sort of, it hasn't a defined path. You can sort of go along, see what you find, as the next column says, hi. searching is probing, you know, moving from one to another, seeing what it's been cited, using the bibliography, sort of crawling your way around and trying to find the most interesting studies. While on the systematic side, there's a very transparent process. So they've predefined all the kind of aspects that should be included, and then they sort of go for a very rigorous search on all studies. They're trying to find everything within a certain field. And that, of course, means, which is further up there, why it has to be so small and very clearly defined, because they're trying to find it all, while your task is to get the broader picture, the scope of this thing. When it comes to identifying the studies that they're going to use, your path will be a little bit different. And I'll show you how to do it later on, how to follow leads. You know, try to find one thing that leads to another that might be newer or even more specific, you know, to your task. And I'll have a look at that later. Quality assessment. Now, this is something that I think I've never encountered a student that didn't find this particularly hard, trying to assess what you're going to use. For your part, I think it will be, you will use a set of quality marks as a part of this selection but it will be your opinion that decides whether or not something will go on. While on the systematic side, they have checklists, international, according to international standards that they will use to cross off things, determining whether or not you can use the study. But one important thing is that on the analysis and synthesis side, when you're trying to sort of boil things down to the essence, when you're going to discuss this, it will be in a discursive format. While on the systematic side, they will have a tabular format. But I'm using the tabular today to you to show you how to do it, because you can use that as the background for your methods chapter. So I'm going to talk, it's a little weird now, but I'll show you later how to do it. But your backgrounds chapter will be in a discursive format. Do you understand what that is? No? I think you've done it in actually most of your work so far. You know, you present the viewpoints and then discuss it in a sort of a whole text combined. While on the systematic side, they will be in a tabular format. Just, you know, I'll show you later. It's easier. The methodological report will not necessarily be given in a traditional sense, but you will do that. So that way, your report will lead more to the systematic part of the review. So as you can see, most of you will sort of lean towards the traditional review, but you'll have some elements from the systematic part. Because we need you to show us that you understand the methods part of this this training. So that's why, you know, it's sort of in the middle but leaning towards the traditional. We don't expect you to do a full blown systematic review. It's just it's beyond what we can expect from master students, actually. Yeah. Questions regarding this? No? Okay. I'll move on, and if you have questions later, we can step back and have a look at it. Okay. It's really hard to understand the present without knowing something about the past. You agree on this, right? Yeah. And a literature review is a great way of learning about the key concepts within a particular subject and to get a grasp of the big picture. So, and remember, I can't stress this enough, remember that your job is to contribute new knowledge via taking a new angle, perhaps, or a new take on things. But you will present what's already been done. So it's a great way to present the theoretical perspective and then, you know, contribute to the new knowledge. And this will be the backgrounds chapter of your report when you combine it. So what we need you to do is to sum up the past and the present, it should say there actually, past and the present, and then you are the mediator of this. We see it through your lens, and then you point towards the future. You know, things that you can imagine will happen next within your field. Of course, based on what's already happened and is happening, so it can't be like a magic trick, you know, presenting a new future that isn't really founded in literature. You need to found it in something that's already been done. But your voice should be heard in this, interpreting the past and the present. But please do not write things like, "I think," or "I find," like that. It's not scholarly to do it like that. So you have to find cleverer ways to present it. So it should be like, based on Smith 2007, Hansen 2015, it is natural to assume that... You see? And when you use that kind of academic language, it sort of heightens the quality of your work. Do you find this difficult? Not at all? Well, I'm impressed. I did. Took me a while to get hang of that. I think I saw a study from the United States, a huge study. They had like interviewed 1,000 students and quizzed like 30,000 or something. It was huge. But they said that I think it was 81% or something of the students found getting started the hardest part of the task. And they defined getting started by choosing a subject to do and formulating a research statement or question. That was the hardest thing to do. And I sort of understand that because there's so much to choose from. So I would recommend spending a good deal of time to find your own topic. It's important to find something that you actually care about. So, you know, don't choose just because you think that's what your teachers want to hear, or, you know, something that you find easy, or, you know, do some work here and choose a subject that you're generally interested in. And because you are from all these different master programs, it's hard for me to sort of suggest things to you, but on the front page of the Fronter room there are some links to subject pages that can inspire you to find your own topic. But I do recommend that you do sort of a brainstorming session. Talk to your peers. I mean, even though you're going to write this by yourself, it's important to sort of get your fellow students' input on it. So, you know, get some coffee, sit together in a group and discuss your chosen subjects, because then you can get really a new angle on this. And use your supervisors, please do. They're there for a reason. So you can use their expertise. But the topic should be developed into main topics and subtopics. So you'll probably find like one major topic and then some subtopics you want to explore. I used to hate mind mapping, but after a while, I think I found sort of the key into using that kind of management tool. So I think that really helped me when I was doing my master's some years ago to really find the related problems and sub-problems of my topic. And I seriously, you know, encourage you to use that kind of tool. But, you know, do whatever works for you, of course. Any questions? You all right? It's early in the morning. You're very, very quiet, aren't you? Yeah. So, after you've done this, I think it's really important to get to the part where you identify keywords. I know you've done this before, but I don't think you've done it on this scale, because the backgrounds chapter actually will be quite an important chapter of your report, and it requires a great deal of work. So you should get started on that right away. And when you identify keywords, that will be the basis of your search procedure. So you list your keywords and you find a synonym. Preferably do this in a form, so that you have everything all lined up for your search procedures. And then you try different research questions or research statements. And let me tell you, I've seen quite a few of those during my 10 plus years here. And while I think most understand sort of the key concept of this and they're trying to find a better way of presenting it, there are still a lot of students are struggling to find really the words to try to explain what they want to look at without it being too big. And you can't have a topic that's just too wide, because a broad subject will mean that you'll never be able to sort of pull this into one report. So you really should think about what kind of words you use when you're writing your research questions. And again, please do use your supervisors, because they have a lot of experience and they can help you. And as far as my, I'm not an information security specialist or a media consultant or anything. But if you want to, you can also try things out on me. If you want to stop by my office and or send an email or anything, try to just test it out on someone who is not a specialist on your field. You can. Can't promise that I'll always make it better, but I'll be able to give you some pointers. So, but do use your supervisors. Obviously, they are the experts. But I want you to spend some time on getting this right, because that will make the rest of the process a lot easier. Can I just say that? Yeah. The next thing that you really want to do is to identify some sources that you may need. And while I think that most of your material, most of the things that you want to use as sources will be journal articles, most of the time. They can also be book chapters or proceedings, for instance. Do you know what proceedings are? Yeah, no. Proceedings are when people go to conferences and present things, they usually write a sort of an article that they send in to conference proceedings afterwards that can be published. And the great thing about conference proceedings are that they usually, if you can find something from this year or last year, they are relatively new of content, because people go to conferences to present new ideas. The sort of other side of this is that sometimes it's not completely finished. The idea or the study or whatever they're doing can be sort of only semi-finished. So you need to sort of use it wisely, but it can be a very good idea, particularly for you who are writing about new technologies, for instance. Conference proceedings can be of really good use if you can find something new. Okay, yeah, moving on. Now we come to the real issue here today, information gathering and synthesizing. I think when I had your last year, I did just a few searches. I didn't really spend a lot of time with you on that subject, did I? But I think I showed you, I probably showed you ACM, Digital Library, I think I did. And perhaps the IEEE Explore. It sounds like me. So today I thought I'll I'll just show you how to use Science Direct and Springlink, and I'll remind you a few things on Aurea, which is the library catalog. It's changed a little bit, so I'll spend some time on that. And obviously, you can still use the video tutorials that are available on YouTube. Some of them have not been updated since the merger with NTNU, but you can still get an idea, at least, from that. Any questions regarding this? Is it okay that we spend a little time on this? Yeah, your professors sort of, well, they introduced me to the thought that maybe this isn't, even though with your tech savviness and everything, that this isn't really about that, whether or not you can type fast and understand how databases work, but how to find information that you're going to use. So they perhaps your professors told me that this might be a good idea to spend some time on this, because they are expecting a broader, more different kinds of sources this year than they did last year. And obviously now you're second year master students, that also has something to do. We expect to see some progression from last year. So I'm going to have a look at this. I'll just move out of here and in here. Just do that. Can you see it properly? Yeah? So obviously, since last year, we've had a new home port, so to say. And there are different ways to get into the databases. You can either use this one. I should put into English, perhaps. Library. And you can use Aurea, which is the library catalog, to search for books or journals, articles, pictures, music, you know, everything, really. And that's changed since last year, I think. We still use BibSys, where you could just search for books and journals. But here you can also search for articles. Hi. But it's you can also use the databases directly by this link right here, or you can go into directly into the library catalog, which looks like this, and do your simple search here. Now, the thing about this is searching Aurea is that you'll get sort of it's a good way to start when you're searching for something, a new topic, because it will give you a lot of different information from various databases all in one, so it's sort of Google-esque in that way. But it's not really great if you're doing more of a systematic review, because then you need to show us the structure of your search. But it can be a good place to start, just to sort of get a little bit of information about where we're going. Now, obviously, since you're from all the master programs, I didn't really have one particular subject that could do for all of you, but I just mooched around a little bit and took something. And if it's, you know, far out from what you're doing, then please let me know, and I'll do something that you're interested in. But I figure out this eye tracking business. Some of you are writing about that, aren't you? Or you know, previous students have, at least. And I thought, we'd have a look at that combined with user interface and something with multimodal structures you know, like TV, news, for instance, with, you know, you have the presenters talking and then you have images and then you have that sort of gliding lines with new information underneath it. And to see sort of if anyone has seen how eye tracking works with those kind of news channels. So I've just done a quick search on that. And then you can see you have 76 retrieved results from the NTNU University Library. and you get retrieved documents. There can be articles, books, book chapters, really anything. Most of these are articles, I think, and you can show full text via this link right here. I should have had this in English, but I never tried it. Oh, look at that. Yeah. So it's really, you know, a simple search in that can give you an idea on what's going on a particular topic or subtopic. So it can be a good way to start. But I guess, you know, from what I know of students and staff, you're starting in Google, aren't you? You're using Google? Yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying that's wrong. and a lot of people do, so they're using, but I do hope you're using Scholar. Yeah, yeah. So you're well versed in Scholar by now. So let's just have a look. Are some of you using EndNote? EndNote and Word? Or how many are using LaTeX? Quite a lot. Are you using BibTeX with that? Yeah? Good. So I'm assuming that you know that you can import things directly from Scholar to BibTeX. Yeah, the same with EndNote. I don't use LaTeX much. So I'm sticking with EndNote, but it's, you know, you get the gist of it. So if I do the same thing here, it says approximately 8,000, but of course we know this is, you know, very random, yeah. I assume that you know that you can get the full text because they've connected Google Scholar with our library catalog, so it knows what we have, etc. It's not always great, but it's usually functioning to some degree at least. Obviously, when you're doing this literature review, you, as you are doing a more traditional literature review, you are allowed to sort of follow your own leads. So are you used to using the citation things in Google Scholar? No? Let's have a look at the top one here, eye tracking in HCI and usability research. It comes up on top of the list, so it's probably relevant in some way, but it's from 2006. It's 10 years ago. So it's probably not the greatest source to use in this area anymore. But it has been cited by 638. And you should also take that number a bit, you know, so-and-so, because they register duplicates and everything, so it's not really a great number. But you can, if you click on that, you can get all the articles that have cited the main one. So it's a really good way to sort of follow leads. And of course, you're probably used to having, you know, when lecturers and everything give you articles to read. They have a bibliography, right? And you're probably already used to going to that bibliography and choosing sources from that, right? Yeah. And then, you know, choosing sources from that, choosing sources from that. It's called the snowball method because it sort of adds on, adds on. But the problem about this is, of course, that as you do that, things will get older and older. Because if I'm to cite something in my article, it needs to be already published, right? When you're using citations, it's the other way around. So things get newer and newer. Both of these methods are acceptable for your backgrounds chapter, or the methods that you're using for that. Do you get the gist of this? Yeah? I know you're tax savvy and everything, but it's just a way of academic thinking that isn't really... Well, no one ever teaches you, right? Yeah. And a lot of databases also have this methodology, or they can use, you can use citations to find newer stuff that might be relevant. And of course, this one also has something that a lot of databases have too, that they have related articles. So if I want to hit this one, it's probably not the best one, but let's see this one. Related articles, then you can find things that are related but not necessarily citing the main article. Do remember, however, when you're using this method, that you will have to document your searches. So remember what you use, what kind of method you use, because you will have to put this in the methods chapter of your reports. Okay. Have you heard this before? No? Okay. Because you're all sort of looking at me like when you're driving a car and thinking no one is watching you. You see? So I'm just trying to see if this we're talking about here, if that's been said before, or if it's something new that you just need some time to absorb it. Yeah? Okay. Before I move on, can I just ask you, just to get an idea on where you are, have you already chosen a subject for your report? No? You've had seminar one, right, already. Was that mostly about the report and the course? Yeah? So this is the first, like, real on writing. Writing academically, yeah. Okay, just to get a gist of where you are in the process. I thought I'd have a look at the databases, but I think maybe we'll go back and have a look at the search documentation form now that you'll use, and then we'll fill it out as we go along. Is that okay? Yeah? Yeah, sure.
When you're searching in the OIA and you get a result, the book is available at the library, but the library is in Trondheim.
Yes.
Is it possible to get it here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'll repeat it, but just because it needs to be on the recording. But the student is asking whether or not you can get books from other libraries within the system, and you can. So it really doesn't matter much if it's in the NTNU system, even, because we can order things from abroad, or we can order things from other universities in Norway too. So, and ORIA will give you an idea on where the books are. So, if you, I'll go back and show you. So you can see here, you're searching the university library. Can you see it up there? If you want to search for all Norwegian academic libraries, you just switch it to here, to this pane, and then you can do another search, and then you'll get everything that is available from Norwegian academic libraries, because we're working together. And we can get practically anything that has been published for you. But there's one thing to remember. You can't do this the day before you're supposed to deliver in your excerpt, okay? So do try to do this, you know, a little bit ahead of time, because we need to get it. And sometimes, you know, 3 days, sometimes 10 days, sometimes even longer if we have to purchase something, which we can also do, by the way. Of course, there's a budget issue and everything, but if you have suggestions to literature that can't be acquired through the library, you can just let us know what you want us to buy, and we'll try to get it for you. Yeah. Okay. That's okay? Yeah? Okay, so we'll go back here and have a look at this. This is a search documentation form, usually used in more systematic reviews or literature reviews that sort of tend towards the systematic part. But it is a great way of starting your methods chapter. So this is why I'm showing you how to do this, because then you can use it in your report. Or even if you don't want to put the form into your report, you can use it as a really good way of finding new literature and keeping track of your searches. Because I don't know about you, but I can't remember what I searched for yesterday. So when you're using a lot of time over several weeks to try to do this, it's a good way to have some sort of documentation. So even if you end up not putting it into your reports, it's a good way to sort of structure yourself. So what I want to do here is to make a numbered list of all my search words or keywords. So if I want to, now I can use eye tracking. And then I did user interface. And I did multimodal. And as I go along, this list will be longer. So perhaps now I can think about, I was sort of saving this for later, but I found out when I did this preparation last evening, I did some searches on this just to see if I was close to something. And then I found out that some people call eye tracking gaze tracking, or eye gaze tracking even. So maybe that should be included. Some people call multimodal things for multi-channel. And as I go along, I do sort of this big picture thing first. So then I you know, have a little look at what I get, the retrieved documents, just have a look at the titles or the abstract or something, and you find new keywords that you can use. And then you add it to the list. So this is just the first sort of introduction that I do for myself. And maybe I'll figure something more out later, and I'll just add to the list. Then I'll do the main search later on. But I'll have a look at the time here. You know what? I think we'll have a break now, because this will take a little more time, and it's 10 o'clock. So we'll have a 15-minute break. And then we'll continue with this later, and I'll show you how to put this into the report. Okay? Okay, see you in 15 minutes.
Okay. This is charged, so now I can use that. Much better. Okay, so a couple of things. One of you came to me in the, during the break and asked me, is it really necessary to explain in the master thesis where you have found each and every article? And the answer is no, of course not, it isn't. But what you need to do, why I showed you this documentation form, is to show you, or to sort of show how you have searched, but not, this is not, this is a sort of a meta level, not on each article, but it is to show you how to document your searches. So it's not necessary to say that, you know, I found Smith 2016 in Springerlink. That's not relevant. But showing you how you searched to find the results, that is very interesting, because it is an important principle within all research to show how you found the results that you found, because we need to be able to sort of, at least on a theoretical level, be able to, you know, follow your tracks and find the same results. So I just thought I'd show you an example on how things can be presented in the methods chapter. This is actually one of my own articles. I hope you'll excuse me, but I knew it was there, so I just took it for convenience reasons. It's not that it's, you know, a perfect example or anything, but it can show you how to do this. But this is an article. It's not my master thesis, but it's an article, so it's shorter, but it shows you sort of the principle. So here I'm talking about the literature review. So I'm saying that it was performed between dates. I'm saying that I chose to only include peer review articles in English or Scandinavian languages published in a certain date frame, right? I say that only studies, this is again my area of expertise to say it like that, but I say that only studies of information skills, information literacy training, and planning and evaluation of such training were included. So, you know, all other kinds of related articles were not included. And that's an important factor, because you want to be quite specific on what is being presented in your literature review. So saying what has been sort of pushed aside is almost as important as saying what's been included. And I say something about co-planning and team teaching efforts were emphasized in the selection of documents. So I'm sort of explaining what has been included. And then I say that searches were performed in the various databases that I've used. In a master thesis, it will also be interesting to learn something about the search topic, the keywords that you've used. So if this was my master thesis, I think I would have included the search terms, the keywords that I've used for searching. But this is an article, so, you know, things had to go. Do you understand how we're doing this? Of course, also ask your supervisors for information about what they expect in the master thesis. It may be different from my sort of idea, but yeah. Was that okay to see an example? Yeah? So we'll go back to where we were. Okay, so this is the search documentation form that you then either can include in the methods chapter or just simply extract information from. And It is very important. I'm taking a break here so that you can just sort of thoroughly understand that this is very important. You have to use the same keywords as far as possible in many databases. That's how we perform a literature review. Okay? And the reason why you do this is that it makes it easier to work in a structured way, and it's easier to compare the results. So let's say that you get 200 results in SpringerLink and 3 in ScienceDirect. Then we can, that's interesting, okay? Because then we can see that either you're searching for the wrong keywords or you're in the wrong place. I'm not saying that 200 is better than 3, by the way. Sometimes 3 is just what you need. And if you get too many, it will take you too much time to go through. So you need to be quite specific. I'm not saying that this search that I'm doing today is golden. That's because I don't know your field of expertise the way you do. So you can do this better than me. Okay? Yeah. But the thing now is that I want to write where I search for things. So if when I say audio, then I can add the combinations that I used. And this is why the list in the first column is supposed to be numbered, because then I can say 1 and 2 and 3. You see? And then I said, how many was it? 176 or something? Was it that many? I'll check. 78. It's all right. 78. You see? And if I try new combinations, I'll just try, let's see, 1 or 4 and 2 and 3. And then I put parentheses around these. Do you see what I did there? I did eye tracking or gaze tracking, because in my world, those are synonyms, right? Eye tracking or gaze tracking and user interface and multimodal. I can even go even further and say, and 3 or 5. See? And you're good at mathematics, so you understand the structure, right? Yeah. So, 1 or 4 combined with 2 and 3 or 5. Yeah. And if I did this, I could build the searches like this. See? Yeah, you can do that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Aria, because I want to spend a little time on other databases as well. But you get my meaning, right? And then you keep on adding the results right here. When you're ready, you can just start anew and then say, we searched for things in, let's say, Springer. And then you can just reuse the numbered list. Do you see how we're doing this? Have you ever done search documentation like this before? No? Do you think it's a good idea? It's allowed to say no. Yeah? I use this all the time, even when I'm not going to use the form, because it is a way of sort of maintaining control for myself and remembering what I've searched for in the various databases. Yeah. So I think this is a very good methodology for you to use. Any questions regarding this? Yes, you can do that. I don't know if you heard what he said, but he asked if he can, if I write down that I search, let's say, only in the title field or only in the keyword or in the full text, and that is possible, and you can do that. I would then sort of do this here, that I would say perhaps title abstract or something, just to say that this is why you got 78 and not 150,000, you know. Yeah, so you can do that there. You can also, if you want, you can also add that you only search for things between like 2014 to 2016, let's say. You can specify that in that field. So it's a way of remembering what you searched for. Mm-hmm. Any more questions? No? When they do teachers training, they tell you if you want to answers to a question you ask, you have to wait 15 seconds. Do you know how 15 seconds? That's a long time when you're just standing there. So you need to be a little bit quicker because I can't wait for 15 seconds. Simple as that. Okay. So if I want to go into the databases now, I can, if I'm already in Aurea, I can use the database list right here. So this is new after the NTNU merger, that we have the database list there. Have you had a look at it? Have you used it? It looks the same if you go into the databases via the library webpage. It's the same thing. They are alphabetically listed here, but you can also choose category. Unfortunately, they're not great for our subjects, right? So they don't have one for, let's say, applied computer science or information security, interaction design. They don't have those sort of categories. So I just sort of recommend you to just go in via the alphabetic list or even searching for it if you know what you're looking for. So I thought I'd go into Springer. And I'll use Springer Link. You can see some information here. I'm sure this is in English available too, if you want to. But Springer Link, and it looks like this. You've probably seen it before. It's one of the main databases for all your categories. It's one of my personal favorites as well, though I can't understand half of the things that are in there because they're very subject specified. But it's a really good database to find important information. And if you search well, you'll find some really good things in there. They provide access to both journals and books, and they have some scientific series as well. It's a good place to start. And here you can use the simple search option because it actually works pretty well. In other places like Science Direct, do not use the simple search. It's very confusing. Use the advanced search option. But in this one, it actually works out pretty well. So I can do eye tracking. And I did user interface. And you can use string search and multimodal. Yeah, you see, 534, and now I can go back to my search form and say I did one, and two, and three, and it's 534. See? I always do this right away. Otherwise, it will disappear and I'll have to do it again. So it's a good way to just keep it going. As you can see, most of them are chapters in books. As far as I know, that's an okay option for you, for your backgrounds chapter. Unless otherwise informed, that's an okay source. But obviously, there's a difference between what kind of sources do you use. Have you been told things about this before? What kind of sources you use? If you want to use, let's say, if you want to have basic information on a larger scale, then a book is a good option. But if you need something that's newer, then obviously a book won't cut it because it takes a while to get things published. So if you need newer data, then a journal is probably a better option for you, or a proceeding. But things, you know, it takes time to get things published. So remember that when you're using a journal article from 2014, let's say, you can imagine that the data that they've used are probably 1 year older, because it takes a while to get things approved through the peer review system, through everything. So just remember that when you're looking for things. But you can refine your search by using chapters or articles. You can click on what you want. If you see other sub-disciplines that might be of interest to you, you can refine by that. There are usually most of the articles and other documents in this are in English. But some of it's in German because it's a German publisher. I don't know how your German is, but well, mine stretches to ordering coffee and things that are not academic German, right? So you might have to sort of refine by language if you find a lot in German or other languages. yeah, any questions? This is a full text database. You're quite lucky because most of our databases that are relevant to you are full text. So you can get the full text right away. Others are not that fortunate and have to deal with reference databases where they only get information on who wrote what in what journal and when. And then they have to sort of do that extra step and order in the journals or everything. But you don't have to worry too much about that because most of the things we have for you are in full text indeed. And you can download the PDF here, or you can have more information if you just go into the article. You can see which journal it's from, and the time and issue and page numbers, etc. And you can also get, this is quite useful actually, you can go into and see the keywords and see that perhaps you can find other suggestions for keywords that might work well in your searches. So now I'm seeing that HCI is probably something I want to include in my searches. Do you see that? Human-computer interaction is sort of mentioned in almost all of the articles that I find. So maybe I'll just pursue that further and put that into my search as well. So this is the way I go along. I find something, and then I look at the keywords, and I add keywords to my search, and then hopefully they'll get better and better. Yeah. I don't think perhaps that this is the most exciting lecture you'll ever hear, but hopefully that it'll be useful to you. But do let me know if you have any questions. And most of the time I say this later on, because they need to test it first to discover where the real problems lie. And my office is in the library, so you can stop by or send me an email if you need help. Yeah. 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 That's a very interesting question. Did you hear it? he's asking, how do you do it when you're using a literature review as a source when you're writing a literature review? Because it will have some problems with primary and secondary sources, right? So, and you can really make that choice. You can either say that only primary sources, like original articles, sometimes called, that present new data or empirical data will be included in your literature review. That's an easy way of sort of avoiding that problem. But or you can use, sometimes people only use literature reviews in the sort of introduction and discussion, and that the main part is only original articles, like empirical articles. So that's one also way of avoiding that problem. But if you find yourself in the position where you need to use a literature review in your literature review, there are several ways of doing that. You can either, you should be honest about the sources that you use. So you can extract what the literature review you want to use are saying. So you can say that the overall intention of the literature review, enter source here, is to blah, 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 blah. Or you can say that in the methods chapter that you've used the literature review, but then made a step further and using the original data behind that literature review. Do you understand? Yeah? So you can sort of go back to make sure that all of the sources that you use are primary. But then you will have to, of course, cite the literature review that you have used, in fact. Yeah. But this is easier when you have sort of a concrete example. So we can address that later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. I already got it actually in the break too. He's asking how you document that you've had articles given to you by colleagues or teachers, indeed. And since you are not doing a systematic review in its strictest form, that's perfectly okay. So then you just you can explain it in the methods chapter, like I showed you my article, right? That there could be a line there that articles that has been given to you by your peers or your teachers may be in fact included. But you can also, of course, once you've described this, you can also, of course, make an effort to find it in to see if it turns up when you search for things. Actually, it should in databases. So when you have an article, you can do a search for it and see if it turns up on your retrieved documents. And it really should, if it's indexed properly. Yeah. Is this useful to you? Yeah? I'd love to talk more about academic writing, academic style, etc., but it's a little difficult for as you are a group consisting of various master programs. So, of course, there are general standards and everything, but do ask if you have any questions about it. Mm-hmm. Have you used SpringerLink before? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really useful database that you really should use. But and you can have a look at the literature list or the reference list here to further explore. And if you want to use now citation information, you can either use the one that is included or you can search in Google Scholar. and then you can see that it's been cited by 6 that Google can find anyway. So if I click that, you can see 6 newer articles that are citing the one that we found in Springer. Mm-hmm. One of you asked me, how do you import things to BibTeX? And there are various ways of doing it, but I actually, I almost always use Google Scholar when I import things into my reference system. Because even though Springer Link has made it rather easy, they have the export citation here, and you can choose BibTeX right there. Or EndNote for me. They've done it pretty simple. Most of the databases have, you know, several steps you have to do to get it imported. So I find it easier just to look it up again in Google Scholar and then using this one, import to, and it's set to EndNote because I'm using EndNote. But you can set it up in right here, I think it is. Yeah, settings. So you can just ask it to change it to BibTeX if you're using BibTeX. Okay. So, but I usually use EndNote. So I'll just look it up in Google Scholar and then import to EndNote, and then I check the data. Just to give you a hint that not everything is great in Google Scholar, and sometimes the data is a little iffy. So you check for spelling mistakes and that the issue is in the right issue field and everything like that. Yeah. But it works out pretty well. Yeah? So I always get the question, how do you present it in the search documentation that you followed citation links? Like I just did in Google Scholar. You know, I typed in the title and then used cited by. And you don't. You don't put that in the documentation form, but you explain it in the methods part. Yeah. That you've used Google Scholar for citation purposes, let's say. Yeah. Any questions? No? Okay. I'll just have a look at the time here. I think I'd like to move on to the analysis form. And this is usually used most in structured or systematic reviews. And then the presentation of the data will be in this format, in the table, tabular format. But I think that it's a good idea for you to use it as your own notes, you know, as a preparation for your discursive part of the report or the master thesis. So if I want to, I can have a look at this. And I'll can import it to EndNote. And then this will give me the way it will look in your reference list, and I'll just copy that because I'm lazy. So I'll paste it into here. Oops, that didn't look too well, but you get the gist. And this will be the way that it will look in my reference list. Now I currently use the APA system, but you will use either Vancouver or Harvard style. The interaction design students will use Harvard, and the rest of you will probably use Vancouver. At least that's the information that I have. And then I look for the purpose or the aim or the research question of this. And I'll have to download the PDF to get an idea of this. But I look for the where they've said what the aim of the study is. Can you see it? It's usually at the end of the introduction. Can you see it? It's difficult to see up there, I suppose. Okay, this sort of looks like a proposed and evaluated adaption recommendation system, blah, blah. And then I'll copy that and paste it into this column. I'll continue with... I don't really have time for it now, but if I did, I would go through the entire article and then write down what kind of method that they've used. I would also give some key results that they've found, and then I'll use this one, this column, for my own comments. So it can either be a comment on the content of this article that I'll use later in the discursive part, or it can be, you know, where to use it, like a note for myself. Like, use this article to discuss blah, blah, blah in my backgrounds chapter. And these, when you have, like, let's say that you'll use 15 articles for your backgrounds chapter. I don't know if that's at all what they're looking for, but just to have a number. Then you'll have 15 of these forms that you'll, you know, either print and put behind before you, or you know, use your own methods. And then you can, it's easier to find the things that are linked. So let's say Cheng has something here, and then Smith has something here, and Johnson has something here, and they're all talking about the same thing. Then I'll put that in one pile. And then, you know, you can sort of organize these forms as to meaning or, you know, content. And then it will be easier for you to structure your backgrounds chapter. Did you get it? Yeah? Okay. okay, I'll move on. When do you stop? When do you stop searching for things? And in theory, you never do, because there's, you know, as I said, every day something new. So theoretically, you never stop, but practically, you stop when you get a sort of a feeling of deja vu, when you're finding the same arguments, the same methods, the same people, even. You'll find that out quickly, actually, that there are perhaps like 10 people that's working on the same thing within your field of interest, and their names will come again and again and again, and your results. Yeah. When you can find no new viewpoints that illuminates your subject, then it's, you know, sort of safe to stop. But this is a huge deal. So again, I beg you to find a research question or statement that's quite to the point, short, and, you know, very determined. Yeah? yeah, so... the last few minutes I want to use to talk a little bit about the formats. It's going a little crazy here, but there's something called waffle and padding, and I wanted to avoid both of these issues. To waffle means being purposely evasive or not explicit. And usually this, when I see waffling in student papers, it's usually because they haven't thought it through yet. When something is very hard to describe and you can't seem to find the words for it, it's usually because you're not done thinking about it, or you don't have good enough sources to describe the issue. So, and that's when usually the sort of the politician's edition of student papers comes to mind, being purposely evasive. Politicians are great at that, you know, talking about something else or turning the questions. And this is something that happens when you're not quite sure on what to say. Padding is what you see up here. Using too many words and unnecessary words to describe a phenomena. And that can be when you're worried that you're supposed to write 10,000 words and you have 7,000 and can't think of a new thing to say. That's when this happens. That you say that Greg Dyke transformed the BBC, changing it so that it was altogether different from what it had been like before, when you can say Greg Dyke transformed the BBC. And a good way to avoid this, you know, the teachers can spot this miles away. Can I just say that? Yeah? They have great experience and they can see this from miles. So what you should do is read more and put new ideas in. That's really the only way to solve that, okay? Cut the language. Use clear, concise language to present your ideas. Sounds easy in theory, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it really doesn't want to work with me here right now. I'll just use it like that. You can see it, right? Yeah, so as I already said, the Harvard of Vancouver styles. And Harvard is author date, the surname of the author and the year. And sometimes if you use direct quotations, it needs to include a page number as well. And the Vancouver style is a numbered style. And can I just say that it's a very, very good idea to use a reference manager like BibTeX or EndNote if you're using Vancouver particularly. Because as we've seen, as we saw last year, actually, when you wrote your essays, you've sort of, it's very easy to get the numbers confused. So they point to the wrong source. because, you know, you I don't know about you, but I can never write things from to bottom, you know, all the way through without making changes. I can't do that because I continually find changes that I want to do. And then if you're not using a reference manager, it's very easy to put in a new source, you know, after three, before four, and then calling that four, and then suddenly you have four, two, four. Or you forget to do your updates and everything, and it becomes very, very confusing. So I do strongly recommend you to use a reference manager, particularly if you're using the Vancouver style. Yeah. NTNU has its own system for writing academically. It's called VICO. It's a Norwegian acronym. It only really works in Norwegian, but it's sort of your guide to information literacy, they call it. And you can find information on how to use the Vancouver and Harvard styles there. You can also, I think my boss has made a new EndNote style sheet that's downloadable from VICO. So to make sure that it sort of follows the Harvard rules. Vancouver pretty much sets, so that works either way. Yeah. Have you ever tried Vico? Yeah? Yeah. It's a place where you can find some general information at least. Yeah. Just before I do this this summary, I have 5 minutes left. I want to remind you of a few things that we discussed last year in scientific methodology. We talked about plagiarism and cheating, and you wrote a 2-page essay for me. And while most of you were on the right track, I would say, I think I found something in all of them, you know. I'm not saying this to discourage you or anything. I'm just saying that we continually need to better ourselves within these standards. And plagiarism is really emphasized deal here, and it becomes even more so for each passing year. And we catch more and more students doing this, and I believe, perhaps because it's, you know, it feels a little better to believe it, but I believe that it is unconsciously done for the most part. So I don't think that students necessarily try to cheat. It's just, yeah, it's something about learning the international standards on this. So I'm begging you, please try to cite everything as you write. And remember that, you know, copying large parts and changing like 2 or 3 words will not help you. You have to spend time on this. I think it's a matter of spending enough time on it. Because when you're hurried, when you have like 5 other assignments to do, that's when it happens. That's when you cheat, whether you mean to or not. And while most of you got it quite right or you know, close, there really were, as there are every year, some quite appalling examples too of things that really goes wrong. And I don't want to get kicked out of here half a year before you're done. So please spend some time to try to understand what we do. And the more you read, the easier it will become, because you will see how it's done. So that's just my thing about plagiarism and cheating. Just don't do it, okay? And listen to your supervisors, because each year I give comments about these things. And sometimes they're not adhered to. So then they hand in a new version, and it's still the problems are still there. So listen to your supervisors and try to adhere to their advice. And if you can't understand what they're trying to help you with, then ask. It's as simple as that. But just a short summary in the end. Start early. Get started now. If you haven't already, you need to start. Find your research questions or statements. Start with your keywords and then find synonyms. Use the documentation form and the analysis form to keep track of what you're finding. And then find the essence of the content. Don't just, you know, mark everything with your yellow marker, okay? There's no way that 100% of an article is just as, you know, relevant. It's just not. Find the essence, the real gem of the article, and then use that, and then cite everything. I would ask you, please, to enter the link provided below and answer a few questions about this lecture, because as you, I need to better myself. So I need your feedback to do it better next year. Okay. You're all looking a little overwhelmed. But, you know, I think this will work out well. Do your work and you will be rewarded. Okay? So thank you and I'll see you later.